This is Car Keys. And good morning, and as sounding like Robin here, we're coming close to the end of the year.
We are. We are. And we're, you know, we've experienced winter driving for the last couple of weeks now. So people are getting used to maybe a little more difficult road conditions. And
they still haven't quite got it with the speed thing, though, I'm noticing. Meaning slow down.
Yeah, slow down. That's the obvious.
You'd think it was obvious, but it doesn't. I've encountered a fair number of people who do not seem to have adjusted. And again, I'm just taking the Robin position here. That have not always adjusted their driving habits to the road conditions at that moment.
Well, and the thing is, the road conditions change. We get, you know, a few inches of snow on the ground, and the conditions are difficult for a day or two, and then we just the roads dry up, they get cleared up, and we're back to driving normally, and we get confident again, and we pick up speed. But it is still very cold out there, and we will hit patches of ice from time to time, and that is something that's, in my mind, a lot harder to deal with than snow on the ground. When it's just snow on the ground, we know how to drive, or some of us know how to drive and how to handle it. Unexpected black ice is just that, unexpected, and that's how really bad things happen.
I know, and I think that sadly people hear black ice on the weather, and they don't connect that piece of information to what's actually happening out there when they're driving. It's just, I think it's becoming a thing. The disconnection is becoming a thing. But unfortunately, there's not much you can do except slow down, right?
Except slow down, yeah. I think, you know, when it comes to winter driving, we've said this over and over, a lot of newbie drivers just have never experienced winter conditions. And we get back to the question of training and how do we deal with snow and how do we deal with ice. And some of us who have gone through a few decades of winter driving have learned to deal with that. But for the others, there are programs out there. And Lime Rock Park, for one, has a program that they run. They try to run as much as they can during the winter, as long as it's cold enough and there's snow on the ground.
How often do they run it?
I'm not quite sure. I haven't checked their schedule. They start the program in January and goes through February, and as long as they can get a little bit of snow on the ground. It seems to be that they have some limited snowmaking capability. So they I think, are hoping to expand the program a little bit this winter. They typically try to get 20-25 drivers. On the skid pad, they'll have, up to four instructors there to coach people. And the program runs, I believe, $350 a day. Bring your own car.
Is your car going to be any worse for wear after you?
Well, it's winter driving, so actually, you're not putting a lot of tire wear on.
I'm not less concerned about tire wear, more concerned about body work.
Well, but no, there won't be any body work issues because it's wide open space. They keep the cars very far apart, and the worst thing that can happen is you spin, and you find your bearings and put it back in gear and go back in the right direction.
All right.
So it's a very safe environment. It is meant to let you build confidence and try things that you would not try on open roads.
Now, I have to say something. Typically, I'm sure this is gender-centric. It's going to get me censured someplace. But most men I know don't admit that they might be, you know, slightly uncomfortable doing something. In other words, how do you get the people that might...
It's a loaded accusation.
I apologize. It's such a fraught time, and I'm being completely facetious, which nobody...
Yeah. Right.
But the long short is, how do you encourage someone who is just... I have a friend, and she just always maintained her husband drove like a blank. He's just like an old blank. She was from Wisconsin. She had zero respect for his ability to navigate in the winter driving conditions, and yet he thought he was fine. So other than in the kitchen.
Some people learn the hard way. You know, they end up in a ditch, and they come to realize that maybe there is something they don't know. But...
but it's also a fun course to take, right? So it's like...
It's a lot of fun. So I mean, driving... Here's the thing. Driving in the winter is a lot of fun. You can duplicate a lot of fun driving at much slower speeds. It doesn't take much to go start sliding around. Now, I'm not suggesting that we should do that on the open roads, and it's a catch-22, but I remember as a kid, I was always looking for big, wide open parking lots to go and do a few... loops and have fun and then get the heck out of Dodge before
anyone noticed.
And anybody noticed, exactly.
And that I think is part of you in the automation of it. This isn't to get all big, but in the like, hey, your car will drive itself. Hey, your car, like, you don't need to do the fun, the marketed fun. Now, for people who are already into it, that's one thing. But for anyone else, it's sort of like, well, this is totally utilitarian. And
well, and back to spirited driving, let's call it that. You know, not all of us get all excited about driving in general or driving in the snow in particular. But what I do see is a lot of people, and you see it more in tough driving conditions, get very tense. And it's just when we are tense, we just don't perform very well, whether it be driving or anything else.
Whatever it is.
So I think the first thing we need to try to remind ourselves when we're driving in these more difficult conditions is just relax. Just take a deep breath, relax, and things will go much better. That and look at things in slow motion in front of you, and you'll be a step ahead already.
And there was one thing that you said last week that is very worth emphasizing. When you are in the skid, if you look at the object that you are terrified you are going to hit, you are much more likely to hit that.
Yes, and it's a little, you know, I teach skiing in the winter, and it's a little like skiing. You know, you want to, or a lot of other sports. My daughter said it about horseback riding. You know, you look at where you want to go because you're going to go where you're looking. And if you are looking at that pole exiting a turn, that utility pole, and you're going, oh, my, I'm not going to make it, well, chances are you are going to end up in the utility pole. You want to be looking at where you want to go. And it takes some training.
But you also need a peripheral. This actually leads to something else. You need a wider... You need to develop a wider lens so that...
A wider lens, and I always say you have to keep the eyes moving. If your eyes are just not moving, even if you're looking far ahead, but your eyes are not moving, you're just looking at that one particular spot, you're just getting paralyzed.
Right, but given that... People are and have been for the last 7-8 years walking around with very small devices.
Oh, those things, yeah.
Yeah, those things that I'm becoming. This isn't a good day to talk to me about them, but simply because I find that it's creating huge common sense disconnects that I have trouble with. But that's just me. You've already trained a group, you know, to keep their focus to be narrowed to that. And so I don't know how you automatically translate that into, it's like, okay, well, keep your eyes moving. Yeah, you need to be a little bit more specific. Look to the, you know, how do you keep your eyes moving?
You look, if I'm coaching a driver, I will, for instance, when I'm driving, I'll ask them at some point, I'll say, how many cars are behind you? And if they have to look in the rearview mirror to tell me how many cars are behind them, I know they're not looking. Their eyes are not moving. They may be looking in front of them, but they are forgetting everything that's happening in back of them. Now, mind you, what's happening in back is certainly less important than what's happening in front, but it is part of that
circumstantial awareness or situational
awareness. Absolutely. So your eyes should be moving between looking in front, where they should be looking most of the time, and then you will have, you will be looking in your rearview mirror, in your side mirrors. And I actually, this is, now I'm going off on a tangent and we're going to get into that technical stuff maybe or not. I think that there will come a day when we will have cameras instead of rearview mirrors, side mirrors, and I do think that the images for those side mirrors should be right in front of us, right on the dash, over the dash, because it takes your eyes off the road to have to check, like, your right side mirror. You need to move your head quite a bit to see in the right side.
Yeah, no, look, if you had sensibly placed on your, and there's, of course, the technology to do it, on your windscreen, if you are encouraged, my issue is when it turns into a game of people are different when they are looking at screens. There's a reason that pilots are trained the way they're trained. There's a reason that, but just a regular civilian who has now spent a long time looking at a screen doesn't, I mean, they think that is real. That's not quite the same thing. Your eyes to a screen are not the same thing as your, you have to develop your observation techniques along the way.
Yes, and it takes training. And those are probably the same people who sit at dinner and look at their phones and can't look at you in the eye and have a conversation.
Yes, but at this point there are more, unless, let me rephrase, unless one is making an active effort to engage people separate and apart from the, you know, put it down, let's have dinner, you can go back to it.
Right.
Then it's, in a lot of cases, being the, it's like, well, yeah, we'll all sit down to dinner with our things and I'll watch a movie. Have you noticed what is advertised during the average sporting event? It's content, it's content, devices, and cars, pretty much. Oh, and pharmaceuticals, but that's
a whole lot of the story.
Yeah.
We're back to talking about screens or phones in cars, and we can say it until the end of time. it's not a good combination, as we know. I was watching I think it was on, it was a Facebook video, and I don't remember where it was, but police were riding buses in cities now to be able to nail drivers who were using their phones and texting and driving, because a lot of people will look at their phones and put their phones, situate their phones right on the steering wheel or on the lower part of the steering wheel, so their eyes are going down, and you can see it when you're driving. You can see people with their heads down,
so,
and the phones are really right downward.
How does riding a bus solve?
Well, the cops riding the buses have up-high view of cars around them, and it's very easy for them to spot them. And I guess they radio, other officers ahead, and that's how they get them.
And a quota is a quota is a quota.
Yeah.
But the fact is that in terms of situational awareness, back to driving on a country road, back to where am I, and something that one of the things that screens have done, and I noticed this with, this crowd, there are people who are absolutely devoted to Waze, the app, W-A-Z.
Yep.
And as a passenger, my problem with it is it, while it gives you information, it's just like you're going along like the lemming to the...
Here's my problem with Waze, and I think Waze is great, and a lot of people that I drive
swear
around
by.
Will say, aren't you using Waze? And I go, no, I'm using Google Maps, and that's enough. I get enough information and not too much. The problem I personally have with Waze is it's an interactive piece of software. So if you're using Waze, the correct thing to do is to also
Participate
and put info into the system. And that's where I think it becomes very difficult to use your fingers and go and hit a screen while you're driving and hit a little pothole icon or a little policeman icon on the screen. And so I'm not a good participant in the Waze system. And I just find the information sometimes a little overwhelming.
And again, mine is I notice this driving around here, having nothing to do with Waze, but having to do with people who just don't know where they are. I remember the first time I had to drive in Connecticut, and it all looks alike. It really does. There are curvy roads, and there are trees, and there are
deer
and ditches, and you know, you have no idea technically where the next. You could be in
a lot of back roads. They're a lot of fun.
I'm not disputing that, but what I'm saying is, I'm a big proponent of actually looking at a map of the entire area so that you know that, for example, you're not in Danbury, but rather in Sharon. Before limiting yourself to the exact direction one by one, but you know, take this step, take this, make a left here in 6.3 miles and so forth.
Yeah, I miss Rand McNally maps too. I used to have a stack of them, and I'd look at them every morning.
If you were planning a trip, would you sort of flip through?
I don't anymore. And granted, you know, I find myself driving, not having a bigger picture of where I am, and it does bother me at times. But you know, at least the overall positive is we know exactly where we are, and we know we can get to where we want to go.
Yeah.
And I will say, it's a lot easier to look at a screen at night at my age with glasses on than trying to read a Rand McNally.
I'm not disputing that at all.
With little fonts that are the size of
very small.
Very small.
I sort of one's left. There are two different sides of the brain for me. Like I would absolutely, I would say, hey, look at your overviews. Like if you're going 2,300 miles, you might want to see kind of where you're going. And then after you've done that, of course, you then go to your.
If you're going cross country, you know you're going to pick the northern or the southern route or the middle route, and you want to do that early on.
Or if you're going down to Florida, you know how you're going to go, but you have to decide what time you're going to hit the traffic in these cities, et cetera, you know, so as not to, but that requires, again, not just responding to each step as your device tells you to do that.
Right.
And it's just, again, it has to do with broader situational awareness. This still happens. There is a road that comes up on, all maps, onto Music Mountain Road that is only open 6 months a year. And every summer, at least, you will find one or two people who have come. They're shell-shocked. They're totally disoriented, but they have followed the directions that were given to them by their device. And that's where it gets a little bit dodgy, I think.
Perhaps, but now I'm going to be a proponent of, I'm going to call them electronic maps, whether it be Google Maps or GPS systems. The bigger picture in my mind is, if we all followed Google Maps or GPSs that have a live traffic alert, we would be moving traffic more efficiently.
Well, that's always been.
It doesn't matter in our neck of the woods, obviously, but if you're in suburban areas, if you're going around the city, if you're going down to Florida, and you have to go around D.C. and you have to go, D.C. is the worst, and there's no right way of hitting D.C. I think that's where technology
is a windfall in the best possible sense.
Absolutely. Now, if you're riding around in your convertible and going around New England in the fall, open a map and wherever you're having coffee in the morning, and plan your trip on an old paper map, and then go and have fun. And if you get lost, it doesn't really matter. You're just driving around to have fun anyway.
Yeah, and P.S., you can always put your GPS on and get yourself back to civilization right quick. Since we are coming up to the end of the year, is there anything that we should know about? Because I'm always get confused about year ends. It's like, is the end of the model year in whatever?
I don't know. I don't know that anybody knows anymore. That 2018, we're talking about 2019 models coming out now, okay? And we're still in 2017. So I think, yes, new models are talked about. 2018 models have been out for a while. 2019 models are talked about and coming out in the spring. And, you know, I look forward to going to the auto show in, I think it's in April, and Robin is already... Put his notice out, you know, and gathering a bunch of car guys to go down to the auto show, and it's an interesting thing and place to go.
And is there anything that you are particularly looking for? Like if Santa was going to say, "Hey, Jay, what would you like?"
Well, there are a few cars I'd really like.
Like what? Such as.
A McLaren, a base McLaren, a 550, 570. You know, I don't need the top of the line, the 570.
What
else? It's a great little car. Don't get me going. How many cars can I have?
It's like the old thing. You know,
do I need an SUV? I have a great SUV already.
If you had three wishes, you know what the final wish is, right? Three more wishes.
Three more wishes?
Right. In other words, you do your first wish, your second wish, and your third wish is three more wishes. So you can have five cars.
Five cars?
Yeah.
I definitely want a McLaren. I definitely want a Porsche 911. I'd have to have an electric car.
Which one?
The Tesla is still the way to go.
Okay, and do you want the new
not the little one.
Right, yeah, okay.
We'll be waiting for 10 years for that
exactly,
one.
Exactly, okay.
I mean, let's not even go there again.
But, what else? You can have anything.
I can have anything?
Any interest in that Lamborghini SUV that's being...
None at all. None whatsoever.
Is that the weirdest looking? It looks like a carnival cruise ship. I just have no desire.
I think for an SUV... Porsche Cayenne. I mean, that's.
By the way, I have to agree that the Cayenne, I still think, is just the hands down the most attractive, normal-looking SUV out there at this point. I don't know.
I'm not sure it's normal.
Well, when I say normal, it looks like a sport. If people still know what SUV stands for, sport utility vehicle.
Yeah.
It looks like it can do.
It can do everything well. Yeah. It can be a luxury sedan. It can be a sports car. You can go pack your stuff and go skiing. It's not a very big trunk, but you know, I don't necessarily mind that.
Are you a skier? Are you a rack? Are you a roof rack guy?
I go skiing a lot of times by myself, so I can just put the skis in the back of the car. I don't have to climb on the roof and slow the car down. Oh, by the way, let's a little notice for everybody. When the ski season is over, sometime in March or April. Taking the ski racks off the car will help your gas mileage to the tune of 1 or 2 miles per gallon. So, you know, I see people all summer long with their ski racks. And mind you, we see kayak racks on the cars right now. So I guess.
It's all basically the same. But what people don't, I had a nickel for everybody who put a mattress on their car and didn't tie it properly, you know.
You don't want to follow mattresses.
No, but
on top of cars.
But what I mean is, until you've actually had the experience of having something on the top of your car, you don't know how true what you've just said is.
Yeah.
How do those what are they? The containers, you know.
The toolbox. They're just storage boxes. I mean, you can put anything you want in them.
And what does that do to gas mileage? Anything?
It affects gas mileage. And I'm not quite sure, but I think it affects gas mileage less than a, let's say, a ski rack.
Because they are somewhat aerodynamic,
yes.
But
I mean, that's the intent. And you can put stuff in them. I mean, they do serve a purpose.
So did you give me your fifth car?
I don't know. Probably another 911.
So
I need a couple 911s.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.